Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. It is often said foreign policy is rarely top of mind in American presidential elections. For the most part, this is true, but not in this election. We have witnessed the intelligence community rally around candidate Harris and a significant number of voters protest against the genocide in Gaza. Crosstalking American Foreign Policy, I'm joined by my guest Daniel McAdams in Lake Jackson. He is the executive director of the Ron Paul Institute for Peace and Prosperity. In Kingston, we have Gerald Salenti. He is founder and director of the Trends Research Institute. And in Ashburn, we cross to Richard Black. He is a former Virginia State Senator. All right, gentlemen, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Daniel, let's kick it off with you. I'm titling this program Foreign Policy Illiterate because even though foreign policy is playing a role here, it is being played in a way that I think is very detrimental to American foreign policy. It papers over real security concerns the United States and the world is facing right now. And of course, we have the intelligence community making their transmigration from conservatives to the liberal Democrats. I mean, a lot is in play here. I just think it's being played in a very detrimental way. Daniel.
Well, the problem is the schools. You know, the foreign policy experts are educated at the elite schools. And what do they learn there? They learn there that you want more foreign policy, because more foreign policy means more jobs for graduates of the elite foreign policy schools. You know, there's no overarching philosophy of what is America's place in the world, how do we get there, what makes sense, how do we keep Americans safe? That's off the table. Nobody's interested in talking about that. They want to bring in the experts who the only thing they know is let's escalate, let's do more, let's run the world. That's a fundamental problem we have, Peter.
Well, Gerald, basically the same question to you, because, you know, we have this consensus about supporting Israel, which is severely damaging America's image in the world. The Western world is also being damaged by this. And then, of course, there's a bit of a divergence on Ukraine. But I would bet you my bottom dollar, whoever is inaugurated in January will more or less keep the same policy. The foreign policy interagency consensus will keep it that way. Your thoughts?
Well, they definitely keep it like that. You know, there's an article that came out recently in the Wall Street Journal. Voters favor ex-president in handling conflicts. Trump leads Harris among swing state voters 50% to 39% on who would be best able to handle Russia's war in Ukraine, and has a wider advantage, 48% to 33%, on who is better suited to handle the Israeli war. But while the survey echoed other polls suggesting foreign policy, it isn't a priority for voters. Mm. And that's very important to understand. You know, there used to be that saying back in the Clinton administration when he first ran back in 1992, it's the economy, stupid. The average person doesn't know anything about what's going on. They know about, you know, did Taylor Swift have sex last night or something like that? That's the news. They don't know about the details going on. Yes, there's the, you know, the Palestinian, the people protesting against the war, like they did recently going to the stock exchange in New York City. But this is in and out of the news, and the average person doesn't know that. So it's just going to be basic issues. And to us, the basic issues are going to be very simply a woman, she's black, pro-abortion versus anti-abortion. Very, very few.
Yeah, but Gerald, let me throw it to Richard. This is all done by design, Richard. Of course, okay. I mean, on this program, I primarily talk about geopolitics, but for the American public, their opinion doesn't really count because they don't want the American public to be educated. That's why I'm calling it foreign policy illiterate, Richard.
That's certainly true, in terms of what the. What the deep state, the bureaucracy wants to have happen. But in this case, we've got a different situation, because the outcome of the election will likely be determined by a handful of battleground states. Michigan is one of them. Michigan has a very high population of Arab Americans and Lebanese Americans. And right now, both of those groups are really furious at the Biden administration and by way of association, Kamala Harris. They put a lot of blame right on her feet. And the other day, the AIPAC, the Arab American PAC, which has always traditionally endorsed Democrats, came out and it's telling Arab Americans not to vote. Now, that's a big deal because in a razor-thin election in Michigan, they stand to potentially lose another U.S. Senate seat and potentially to lose the presidency. It's amazing, but the Muslim community up there may determine the outcome of the presidential election. So even though the trend is always to keep the people in the dark and to keep foreign policy under the guidance of the astute people in the Pentagon and State Department, the globalists overseas, it's not working out this time. And so you can see it both with what's going on with Michigan, and also we can talk more as we go on about Ukraine, but I think there's some very interesting things happening there in America.
Well, it's interesting you say that because, Daniel, I mean, when we look at these people from the ivory tower, I mean, they have their record is wreckage. I mean, one catastrophic failure after another. But the status quo will be maintained. I mean, how do you square that, Daniel?
Well, you know, when I got the email from your staff and I heard the title, I immediately thought of Mike Johnson. We talk about illiterates because he had a quote. I'm sure all three of you gentlemen saw it. He said, when Trump's elected, he's going to call up Putin and say, that's enough. You know, and I think Medvedev in Russia made a comment about that, but that's the extent of it. The idea that you can get someone up there doesn't have any concept of the reasons for this war, this conflict going on, doesn't have any concept that other states have existential, the importances that they have to deal with. It's simply, we're going to call you up and tell you knock it off. You know, Trump's going to call up Netanyahu and say, do this and do that. You know, and that's so I guess what I'm saying is the problem with illiteracy goes all the way to the very top. The people that are looked at as the experts, they know nothing about foreign policy at all. You know, there was a recent interview with Howard Lutnick, and I'm not picking on the guy, but he's a co-chair of the Trump transition team. And he was talking about the kinds of people that Trump is going to have doing foreign policy in his next administration. And he said, yes, I'm working very closely with the president's son-in-law, Jared, and we're going to get the best people with the best experience in foreign policy and national security in there. So we all know what Kushner likes. And so that's it. That's, team A, team B.
Oh, Gerald, we have the very famous October surprise. The October surprise was actually a foreign policy gambit when we had Ronald Reagan running against Jimmy Carter. And, we had October surprise, and we've had it ever since. But do you see one happening this year? Apparently, coming out of Israel, the Netanyahu government says that they won't. Soon will be a strike, which would obviously against Iran, which would be designed to influence the American election. Is that the October surprise?
It may well be. It may be a false flag event. You know, one of my sayings is when all else fails, they take you to war.
Yep.
I mean, you talk about Netanyahu. People forgot about the 39 weeks of the protests against his Judicial Reform Act. 39 weeks, Isaac Herzog, the president of Israel, called it a civil war. A civil war was going on before the Hamas attack. Now let's go back to the U.S. election. When all else fails, they take you to war. And we see that happening as well. And you mentioned Netanyahu said they're going to strike before the November 5th election. Let's go back to a guy, a little daddy's boy of nothing, a little Georgie Bush, a clown boy that you can't find better in a comic book. We're going to get that guy Osama bin Laden dead or alive. What was going on before that? Oh, the dot-com bust? Oh, you mean the NASDAQ was down over 70%? His ratings are in the toilet? And what happened when we're going to get that guy Osama bin Laden dead or alive? 90% of the American people swallow the garbage coming out of that little boy's mouth. There's going to be a false flag event, whether it's, you know, the Russians hacked our banking system, whatever it might be. They're going to make up something before November 5th so the people rally around those in power now.
Richard, what do you think the October surprise may be?
I don't know. I mean, we saw this with Bill Clinton, where he was on the verge of the Senate hearings over impeachment.
Oh, yeah.
And what did he do? He reversed American foreign policy, and he waged war on Serbia. I remember there was an interview with a man on the street in Serbia, and he was, what do you think of the United States attacking Serbia? He says that's absurd. He said, it could never happen. We're one of the strongest allies of America. We helped America during the Second World War. That this is not happening. And lo and behold, we bombed the Chinese embassy. We bombed passenger trains. The laws of war meant nothing. We just slaughtered people. And Bill Clinton managed to pull it off, and he was acquitted by the Senate. And he and Hillary were known for having watched and been fascinated by the movie Wag the Dog. And so there is no doubt this is always a potential. Now, I would say one thing is that a difference today is that the United States has been so deeply involved in wars everywhere. I mean,
Richard, I have to jump in here. We're going to have to go to a hard break. And after that hard break, we'll continue our discussion on American foreign policy as we approach the election. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter LaVelch. Remind you, we're discussing the American foreign policy before the election. Okay, let's go back to Richard. Before we went to our hard break there, you were making a point. Please finish up.
I just conclude by saying that it is a little more difficult for the administration to do a false flag situation right now because people have been so battered by so many wars that war just doesn't have the panache that it used to have. We're fighting everybody on the face of the globe. Everybody is our enemy. It must be about a third of the world's population are condemned as being evil enemies of the country. And I think people are a little bit fed up, so it won't quite have the same sting.
It's been said to me once you can divide the world into two parts, countries that are under sanction by the United States and the other countries that buy American arms. But that's maybe a topic for another program. Daniel, weird hypothetical, but because of looking at the polls, it's very tight. We've already talked about the battleground states. But an October surprise, I'm going to give you mine, is that they force Biden out and Harris becomes president. We have a war with Iran. Go ahead.
You've already got A and B. And now C is coming, you know. And that could well be the case because, you know, the thing that's interesting, you know, is that who loves the illiterate foreign policy experts is the deep state. There's no question about it. And Gerald reminded me of this when he mentioned George W. Bush. Because if you remember, the rationale for going into Iraq was, he tried to kill my daddy, you know. And now we have Trump saying, I got to hit Iran. They're trying to kill me. Well, who told each of these people this? It was the deep state, you know, when it comes with Iran.
And the same group of people that derailed Trump's foreign policy when he was president. Yeah. And he's listening to them now. Amazing. Keep going.
Literally. Avril Haines is the person who helped cook up Russiagate. She's the one who personally briefed Trump saying, the Iranians are trying to kill you. And then he said, the Iranians are trying to kill me. You know, I mean, they set this up, they tee it up and kick it off. And it just, you know, it lands through the goalposts every single time.
You know, Gerald, it seems to me that the people that are in power right now will do anything to maintain it. Okay, this is unfortunately, elections are more and more of a blood sport here. I don't know who's going to win the election, and even if there is a winner, will that same person be inaugurated in January? That is where we are right now. I mean, they did impeach Trump when he was out of office. Why wouldn't they do it again if he wins this election?
Yeah, again, you know, it's a, you're asking why they do it. They're politicians. They're low-life pieces of garbage. I was the assistant to the Secretary of the New York State Senate. Worked on major political campaigns in Westchester County, the richest county in America back in the 70s. And I quit. To watch grown men grovel to suck their way up to the top is what the whole political system is. These are the little boys and girls I couldn't stand in high school and college that want to be class president or head of student council. What do we got, an election over here? It's a Disney World White House. Minnie Mouse versus Donald Duck. You know, we have Daniel McAdams here. The last person I voted for was Ron Paul in 2012. Yeah, yeah. It's not a government. It's a crime syndicate. You're talking about the military-industrial complex. Hey, how about that guy, George Washington? A real man that fought. Don't become involved in any foreign entanglements. Don't love a nation, don't hate a nation. If you do to either one, you're a slave to them. Ah, the hell with Washington. I'm little Lindsey Graham. I'm little Mike Johnson. Little boys that couldn't fight the way I have a paper bag. We love war, but we don't fight. It's not a political system. It's a bunch of low-life little jerks in a country near you. Look around. What do you got, that little Gaston Macron over there in France? Olaf Scholz over there in Germany? Little Trudeau over here, another daddy's boy in Canada? What political system? It's a bunch of little low-life, little arrogant boys and girls. And if you want to know about a narcissist, could you find one better than Trump?
Yeah, well, and they all spend other people's money, too. I mean, on top of that, and that's a good gig if you can get it. But, Richard, you know, when you look at Kamala Harris, I mean, there's a lot of things you can say about her. I don't need to repeat them. But she really is the perfect vessel for the deep state that we're talking about. I mean, she has no opinion on anything because she doesn't really know anything. So she will go, if she ends up in the White House, she is the perfect gift. She will just go along. Richard.
Yeah, I think what we'll see with her is just a blueprint for the Biden administration. She will duplicate. She's going to be a carbon copy of that. I just don't see her having the intellect to really design foreign policy. I think she's there to giggle and cackle and go on, you know, my daddy, whatever. And, you know, she's not a serious person. Even in the Democrat primaries, she was the first person to drop out. She couldn't get to first base with a whole slew of Democrat competitors. So she is essentially an empty suit, if ever there was an empty suit.
Well, I mean, she epitomizes neoliberalism. I mean, you fail upward. That's what all these people do. They all fail upward, okay? And we're punished for it. It's amazing. But Daniel, you know, let's flip the script here. I mean, Joe Biden had 50 years of foreign policy experience. He was a senator in the Roman Senate, apparently, okay? But look at the results. See, I don't know who said it, but they should get a Nobel Prize for it. You know, it doesn't matter who you vote for, you end up with John McCain.
Yeah, that was Tom Woods.
Okay.
My old friend. Yeah, but the thing is that when Joe started cutting his teeth on foreign policy, you know, the U.S., well, not when he started, but the U.S. was kind of at its apex in terms of military power and the ability to project power globally. It was right at the end of the Cold War. And as that has shifted, you know, you use it and you lose it. That's what happens with military. And so we decided we wanted to run the entire world, and we expended force, we expended energy, we expended dollars, and now we're at the position where we've kind of reached the end of the ability to project power internationally. We see that with Ukraine. We've poured everything but the kitchen sink into Ukraine, and we're still losing. We're going to send a THAAD over to Israel, and that's going to take out the Iranians. Well, a THAAD has like 72 missiles.
Yeah.
You shoot two of them for each incoming, you shoot two. So they're going to hit 35, maybe 35 incoming. The Iranians lobbed over 200 missiles a couple of weeks ago, and they've got thousands and thousands of in reserve. So we have reached the end of American military power. The giant hasn't woken up yet and realized that his powers are gone. And that's the real reality that we're facing. And it's going to hit America in the face like a brick.
Yeah, because, Terrell, I mean, it's a business model the way I look at it right now. Because, they, you know, we're, these values that these politicians keep talking about, it's just, it's all vacuous. It's vapid, empty language. But it's good for the bottom line. I mean, and these politicians even talk about how it's good for business. They were open about it. Gerald.
Every gun that is made, every warship launched, every rocket fired signifies in the final sense a theft from those who hunger and are not fed, those who are cold and are not clothed. The world in arms is not spending money alone. It's spending the sweat of the laborers, the genius of the scientists, the hopes of the children. This is not a way of life at all in any true sense. Under the clouds of war, it is humanity hanging on a cross of iron. Dwight D. Eisenhower, 5-star general, supreme commander of the Allied forces, 2-term president. And here we are. The country's rotting in front of your eyes. The roads are like crap. The bridge is collapsing. Amtrak, a subway in New York is a night in Calcutta. Go down to the city. Under every scaffolding, there's homeless people. Migrants everywhere. The country's rotting in front of our eyes. And all this trillions of dollars going to the military-industrial complex and hundreds of billions going to the Ukraine. And when you put it together, Israel war. It's disgusting what's happened.
Yeah.
The military-industrial complex is running this country. And about Kamala Harris or Kamala Hilarious being just, it's still the Obama administration.
Yeah.
It was under the Biden administration.
Yeah.
It's the same gang in control.
Yep. Wait, Richard, let's say Trump makes it into the White House miraculously in January. Won't he be sabotaged like he was during his first term?
You know, that's a very good question. And I think the answer is very important. When Trump took over the last time, we had a Republican Senate, we had a Republican House, but they were led by Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan, who they despised the MAGA movement. They despised the voters and their beliefs. And they just intended to run things the same old way. Both of those folks are gone. Now, Mitch McConnell's still there, but he's not going to be the...
Well, he's still there in what sense? I'm not really sure, but I mean, yes, he's...
That's true. Okay. But in any event, there's been a sea change in Congress. There is much more receptivity to Trump, his leadership. At the same time, you look at the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court has flipped from the time that Trump was elected in 2016. It's much more conservative, much more amenable to the initiatives of Donald Trump. In this election, Donald Trump has committed to ending the Ukraine war. He's been very explicit about it. He says, I'll do it in the first 24 hours, whether he means that literally or figuratively. The fact is that the stars are aligned for him to carry out what he intended in Ukraine. And I believe he really intends it. Now, keep in mind, even the New York Times now is saying that it looks like the Republicans will take the Senate. That's become a pretty widespread consensus. It's just a question.
Well, we're rapidly running out of time, but if the Republicans do well in the Senate, at least the chances of him being impeached and removed from office will be less. We'll see, gentlemen. So many questions here. That's all the time we have. I want to thank my guests in Kingston, Ashburn, and in Lake Jackson. And, of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, Crosstalk Rules.